All right. Hello and welcome to the RPG Academy podcast Twitch channel. My name is Michael and we're here tonight for Detention Live. Joining me as always is my co-host, Chris. Chris, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And then joining us tonight as an extra special guest co-host, we have my offspring, my oldest, John. John, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
So this, I think John actually, if I remember correctly, I had him on once before, I think right before last year's Acadicon, because we were talking about he was going to run a game. So I don't actually think this is his first time, but I don't think we did a traditional detention that time, but we're going to go through the whole thing. We're going to be doing some improv games. We're going to be singing songs and making silly voices. So pretty excited about all of that. But we are going to kick things off as we always do with extracurricular. So this is where we just talk about stuff we've been up to recently and, you know, usually within the nerd sphere, has something to do with gaming or books or video games, that kind of thing. Normally I let the guest go first, but I want to have John have the chance to like hear one of us go. So Chris, if you don't mind, will you kick us off with what you've been up to lately, bud?
Just finished The Acolyte because I don't think there's another episode. Unless there was one this week. I don't remember.
I think it's over. I have not watched an episode, but all my TikToks and all my social media have been like talking about it. I've seen good and bad, but I feel like they were talking about the finale. So I think it's over.
I'm still on the fence. Okay. I like parts of it. Other parts of it I didn't like. The little reveal of who the Sith Lord is, and they didn't say specifically. You just get to see kind of the shadow and the shape of him. I think I know who they're trying to play it up to be. I'm a little confused because timeline-wise, he'd be like 5? Mm. Not quite old enough, I don't think.
Well, I have two kids, and those bastards were evil early, too. So, you know.
Well, that's true.
But they weren't Sith Lord evil. Oh, wait, John's on this one. Sorry, no, I mean, my kids are angels.
So we'll see how that plays out. I like the fact that they did end up going darker in the end and not with a complete redemption story, and nobody at the end was like, hey, we're all good and we beat the bad guy. It's like, okay, so you did keep it still going dark. So I'm curious to see what they'll do with the second season. I hope they actually get into some of the training with the Sith, but that might be too dark for Disney. I don't know. We'll see. I did get to play a new game.
Oh, nice.
It's called Eat the Reich.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
So it's
amateur hour, John. You're already knocking your microphone off the desk. What's wrong with you?
It's kind of a neat little one shot. The idea with it is you're all playing vampires. It's World War II. You're dropped into Paris and your whole goal is to go eat Hitler. You go from location to location and you basically build up dice pools. So like you might have a 3 in your whatever skill for shooting, and then you have a weapon which has different characteristics, like it might be short range or long range or whatever keywords are in there. As long as you can work it into how you're describing it, you get to build up more dice. So you roll your dice. The scene you're in has like an overall objective that has points you have to beat. And then there's like, there might be minions in there or a bad guy in there that also has kind of points you have to beat. So it's pretty much you roll against the GM. Next person goes, and once you've beat the scenario, you can move on to the next location. I like it because it could be as short as, okay, we're going to do 3 locations and we're done, or you could spend hours going from each location, and you do get to kind of advance your character a little bit, but it's not designed to be a long-term RPG. It's just kind of a fun one-shot. The rules were simple. We could learn it in 5 minutes and just go out and have some fun with it. So that was a fun one. I don't think I've done too much else too new other than that. Still caught up with the boys. I gotta wait for this week's episode. I don't, you know, some people say this isn't the best season and I would disagree. I won't say it's the best.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it's the best, but I don't think it's nearly as down as I've been seeing online people talking about it.
I don't know. I like it. I'm enjoying some of the backstories and some of the ups and downs and the continual unraveling of Homelander going more and more just crazy. I'm expecting in next season to him start painting his face like the Joker and, you know, like having that, you know, manic laugh, but we'll see where it goes. I'm still curious to see what they're going to do with Butcher. Are you caught up?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you saw the big reveal in the last episode. So without giving spoilers to everybody else, I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that.
Yeah. Is it not super familiar with the source material. When it first came out, I loved it instantly. Like that first episode was like, wow, this is like super cool, super interesting. So I went out and read some of the comics and they're terrible. Like they're just straight up awful. Not good, not awful. Like, oh, it's so dark and grit. No, it's just they're bad. So this is one of those situations where the actual movie or show is so much better than the source material, in my opinion. But they did still take a lot of plot lines and characters and stuff. So they're mining the source material for a lot of stuff. But I believe that reveal does tie to the comics as well. So again, I've been watching some TikTok creators talking about the show, and they have said some things that make me think that is from the comics.
I haven't read the comics. Every now and then I watch little YouTube videos where they talk about the differences between the comics and the show, and quite a few differences. Mm-hmm. I've actually been having fun watching on YouTube. The actors actually get on there and answer questions about the show and their characters, and to see how in real life, they're not like these big buff.
Oh no.
Like their suits add a lot. The camera angles add a lot. Like it's funny. And to just see them interact with each other and how playful they are back and forth. And it's kind of fun to see them not in their character and just having some fun with it. And I agree with you, Scrooby Nave. Homelander's facial expressions that actor's amazing.
Yeah. Like, if he doesn't get an Emmy nod for that, like there's just no justice.
Yeah. Well, they give it to something that's that dark, though.
Maybe. We'll see. Hopefully. It could be like Lord of the Rings. Like they're waiting until the show's over, and then they'll give it like a whole bunch in one season. Like they've done that with other shows before. Like a show that's just like so good. They're like, well, they're going to win it every year, so we're going to wait till it's over. But I don't know. Yeah. I love how John shaking his head. You've not seen The Boys. You don't know anything about what we're talking about.
Yeah, I've seen a couple like YouTube shorts and just videos, but I haven't actually watched the show yet.
Yeah.
Just like I do in class when I'm looking out the window, staring at the clock.
That's fair. That's fair.
Very fair.
I have heard and read a lot of people agreeing with you, Michael, that the show is so much better than the comic or graphic novel.
Yeah.
My understanding is the graphic novel was written by a guy who doesn't like comic books.
Yeah, Robert Ellis, Warren Ellis, one of the Ellis. Yes. Yeah.
He wrote it as kind of a middle finger to comic books, saying this is what comic book hero should be, and he just went way off on the deep end. And I've definitely seen some differences, and most of the characters are dead or in the comics, so it's pretty rough. So other than that, just doing adult things, getting the house fixed up.
Oh, that's okay. I wasn't sure where we were going with that, but okay.
Yeah, no PG-13.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Just doing adult things, work, fixing the septic tank, boring stuff like that. So what have you guys been up to?
All right, John, we'll go to you next, bud. What you been up to lately?
Well, I've been watching the final season of Stranger Things, or the final season that's out already. And I think it's pretty good, even though everyone could easily outrun the Grinch they call Vecna.
It's a Michael Myers thing where he always walks, but yet they can't get away. It's a classic horror movie homage. I think that's what they're doing. Because you're right, he is not rushing at all, but he's always just there.
But again, it's super hard to get scared of him when he looks like the Grinch without fur. Like if the Grinch got his hair cut, that's what he would look like.
Now I got to look it up. I don't know what he looks like. Yep. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, in Whoville have been dealing with this since like the 1990s.
So we had tried to get the boys to watch Stranger Things a few years ago because I've been a big fan since it came out. Oh, and we couldn't quite get them to. And then just 2 or 3 months ago, we finally talked them into it. And we've been binging like a couple episodes a night when we could. And we have one episode left in season 4. So we'll probably finish it tonight.
You probably could have gotten season 4 with me when I was 6. The Grinch is just like, there was that scene where Max first gets haunted by Vecna in the graveyard, and she's like running away, and you can see him look out over at her, and he's just standing there with his like half a beer belly with all the makeup that must be on him.
All right.
It's just so silly.
All right. Fair enough. What else have you been watching, or what else have you been doing?
Well, I started rereading Percy Jackson for like the 75th time.
Mm-hmm. You were a pretty big fan of the Disney Plus series, right? You did it like that or no?
I think that the first couple episodes were maybe better than okay, but they weren't the best or anything. I'd rather read the book than watch the show.
Okay. Fair enough.
Be prepared. There's never been a show or a movie as good as the books.
Except The Boys, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yep. That's fair.
We've been watching Deadpool because we have tickets for tomorrow night. We're going to see the third one. Yeah. So we watched the first one, but John had never seen the second one. So I think we watched that as a family like a week ago or so.
Yeah.
That's tomorrow? I thought that was next week.
No, it's, well, technically Friday, but they had like the Thursday night showings. Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Oh. So we written down wrong.
Yep. So anything else you want to share with us, John?
I don't think so. My life's pretty boring.
But that's the way you like it, right? You just like being chill. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. All right.
Just like class.
I'm going to send this to all your teachers, just so you know.
Okay.
So for me, just a few things. So again, just a final mention that my game, Action 12 Cinema, was nominated for an Innie. Voting is now closed, so its fate has been sealed one way or the other. I don't expect that we got enough votes to win because there was a Paizo book, which is Pathfinder, and then there was that Shadow Dark, which was like a $3 or $4 million Kickstarter. Like it has a huge fan base. So I think we would have been lucky if I could have got to like 1,000 votes, and I assume both of those will have hundreds of thousands of votes. But I'm still going to go to the Innies. I'm still going to be there. I'm going to hobnob with everybody else, rub some elbows, maybe try to do some networking. But truly, the fact that it got nominated is a big honor for me. So I'm very excited about that. Next week is Gen Con. So at this point, next week, I will be in Indianapolis. You know, again, fingers crossed, nothing bad happens. And I actually got I scored an invite because I'm still on a lot of the press lists for a D&D, the new D&D, like a premiere event. So it's an off the books event. I'm sure there's a lot of people going. I am not special, but I did get an invite. I did get a plus one. So Brad's going to be going with me. And we're supposed to hors d'oeuvres and snacks, drinks. And then they're going to have a lot of folks behind. I think we're going to get like early looks at some of the stuff. I think it's going to be like presentations. I don't actually know what it is, but I got the invite. I'm like, hell yeah, I want to do that. And I'm not allowed to take video during the event, but I am allowed to talk about it. So I will be doing some live TikToks from Gen Con. So obviously Wednesday night, that's going to be one of the big things that I talk about. So I'm kind of excited to see how that goes. I haven't really kept up a lot with the new releases and like as far as like what the changes are. So I'm kind of going into it without a lot of already preconceived notions. So I'm going to be a sponge absorbing what they say, and then I'll kind of mention that out to everybody else. And then I watched The Bear. I continue to love that show. That is another show that season 4, a lot of people were down on, and probably it's not as good as the other seasons. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I'll need to deep dive into it here, but I just love those characters so much that I just like spending time with them. Like it didn't bother me that the momentum didn't go forward a lot because I just enjoyed all the moments with those characters. And I went back and I started rewatching season 1. That first season is like incredibly well made. Just the writing, the acting, everything about that show, season 1, is truly a masterpiece. So maybe season 4 isn't as good as season 1, but almost nothing on TV is as good as the season 1 of The Bear, in my opinion. Right. So yeah. So again, I don't know. But that's kind of the big things. Actually, I do want to mention again, circling back to Action 12 Cinema. Caleb kind of showed me some ways I can look at information I didn't know I had access to. So I can actually see which game stores are selling my game physically. And So I've started doing some social shout outs on that. It is super cool to know that there are game stores in the country that have my book on their shelf. I haven't actually gone to one yet because that's like a big thing for me is I want to go to a store that has my game and like take a picture, but it will be for sale at Gen Con at the IPR booth. So I 100% I'm going to be going to the IPR booth right away and taking a picture of it on the table with my little nominated for an Innie sign that they put on all of those. Truly hope they all sell out because that would be super exciting for me. And then I'll just wrap up again. Akatacon. No, it is that way. Nope, that way. There we go. Akatacon. Once Gen Con is over, Catacon season, we are full tilt. Everything's going to start happening pretty quick. badges go on sale August 15th, which is basically like 3 weeks from now. So 3.5 weeks. So it's exciting. It's nerve wracking. All these decisions, all these plans we've been making, we're going to start to see if it works out or not. So that is enough for me on extracurricular. So now we're going to move into what is known as 10 things. So this is the first of two improv games that we're going to do tonight. The idea here is that we're going to take turns prompting each other one time around, and we're going to prompt you to say, give me 10 examples of X, or name 10 of these, or 10 of something. And your job is to try to come up with a list that matches the prompt as quickly as possible. So as, in terms of the game, you are more successful if you come up with a list quickly, more so than if you actually come up with 10 things that actually make a lot of sense. So immediacy is more important than accuracy. John, you are the guest tonight, so you get a choice. Would you like to go first in terms prompting Chris or I for our 10 things, or would you like to be prompted first and actually go first giving your list?
I want to prompt first.
Okay, you get to pick Chris or myself. Who would you like to prompt?
I'd like to prompt you.
Okay, so go ahead, give me your prompt.
What are 10 things a sand shark would have eaten?
Sandals.
One.
Beachgoers.
Two.
Lawn chairs.
Three.
Pool floaty.
Four.
Smaller land sharks.
Five.
An actual shark that got thrown off of a boat in a tornado.
Six.
Rocks.
Seven.
A corrupt mayor.
Eight.
Mice.
Nine.
And chlorine tablets.
Ben.
Hey, that was in fact a list of 10 things. So now I will prompt Chris, and then Chris will end up by prompting John. So Chris, give me a list of 10 adult things.
Oh, fixing the septic tank.
One.
Fixing the leak in the tub.
Two.
Mowing the lawn.
Three.
Getting a bad haircut.
Four.
Wearing shirts that are way too big that you shouldn't be wearing.
Five.
Wearing a shirt that you outgrew 5 years ago but can't get rid of.
Six.
Doing the dishes.
Seven.
Cooking dinner.
Eight.
Booking a trip on a cruise.
Nine.
Nine. And not arguing with your wife.
Ten. That is, in fact, a list of 10 things. All right. So, Chris, you will now prompt John.
All right, John. How about a list of 10 video game characters?
Minecraft Steve.
One.
One.
Samus.
Two.
Two.
Link.
Three.
Three.
Mario.
Four.
Four.
Luigi.
Five.
Five.
Tails.
Six.
Princess Peach.
Seven.
Seven.
Bowser.
Eight.
Eight.
Wario.
Nine.
Nine.
Waluigi.
Ten. Super Smash Brothers really came in handy there, didn't it?
Yeah. Waluigi isn't in Super Smash Bros.
All right. Well, fair enough. They didn't all come there, but yeah, still.
I went to Mario Kart. That's where I was thinking.
Yep. All right. So now we're gonna move into used books, and this is often what we kind of think of as sort of the meat and potatoes of the show, where we talk about a campaign that we've been playing or running. The idea here is we're going to try to find some lessons learned, something that we did that worked really well that we want to try to, again, in other situations or circumstances, or maybe something we tried that failed spectacularly and we're like, okay, we're not going to do that again. So, John, you're the guest tonight. So I want to talk to you about this new campaign that you recently started, because you were running one for one kind of batch of friends, and now you have started a second campaign with some of those same friends, but then also other friends. So feel free. I mean, again, I have no idea if any of them will ever watch or listen to this, but you know, if you want to try to keep it somewhat spoilery free, that's okay. But tell me a little bit about the campaign, like your inspiration, and just like, how's it going? Like, how are you feeling as the DM of that game?
So, I was watching some YouTube shorts, and it was like talking about how you don't know what character stats you have or something like that. And that reminded me of the show we watched. I'm not sure when. It was not too long ago, but it's called The Hollow.
It's on Netflix. And it's an animated show.
Yeah. And basically it's about these three like teen/adults/young adults that have basically just forgotten everything and are trying to get back home. And at the end of the show, If you're in my campaign, click off for like a minute.
Yeah. So spoilers for season one of The Hollow.
Yeah. But it's revealed that they were in a basically game show VR headsets where they're just participating for money or something. And that was the twist of the show. So I decided to just base my D&D game loosely off of that, have the same monsters and the same like story beats. And when doing this, I was like, okay, so I was told I should plan less for this. So I just watched the show and then I'm like, okay, I'm done now.
Welcome to my
and
DMing.
During the first session, it was the best session I've ever DM'd. Like, everything was great because I didn't plan anything, so nothing could go wrong.
You can't go off the rails if there are no rails.
Exactly.
Well, so, and I would wager to say that part of the reason it went well is you weren't focused on what you had written down. You were focused on your players and paying attention to them, which is one of the reasons why I keep things very loose with my planning. I have like story beats and that's about it. If we hit them, we hit them. If we don't, okay. If we end up talking to the waitress for an hour, we talk to the waitress for an hour. Wherever the story goes is where I just kind of go. And I think that's a skill not many people have. And developing it now is the right time. And since you're still pretty early at DMing.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting you brought up an hour since it took them 3 hours to fight four characters in a group of four adventurers.
Yep. That's how D&D works sometimes. So I do want to say a couple of things there. I think it's, and again, Chris, you can correct me, but I feel like that's something that a lot of us have done as DMs is tried that game where the characters sort of wake up, they don't know who they are. So like, they don't know if they're a fighter or a wizard. And it's like, not until they're like, I'm going to like cast a spell. And that's how they find out they're a wizard or not. And they're like, I'm going to try to climb the rope. That's when they learn how strong they are. I know I've tried that several times. And it's never really worked well. I've not used the same model that John is using with like that story beat. I won't repeat it for the spoilers, but I've always done like they were, you know, typical D&D heroes, but something like they lost a big battle against their BBEG and now they have lost their memories. I feel like that's something a lot of folks have done. I've never done it. Either I've not done it well or it just didn't go well. I'm not going to say I own all of that, but it's something I'm still interested in doing. Have you ever had that type of game where you've done that, where the amnesia, you don't know who you are type of thing?
No. The closest I've done, well, two ideas. First, Shadow of the Demon Lord does a lot of that, kind of what you said of you start off as a regular person and then you kind of find your abilities. So you can find you have spellcasting, and all of a sudden you find you're sneaky or however, and that's where you actually get your class. So I've played a lot of that. I have played a game that's similar to kind of how you described it. They wake up and they're in a video game, except I did it that a evil wizard was pitting them in a simulation to see how they would react so he could learn how to manipulate people better. So what I actually did is they had to fight through a dungeon, basically, and at the end they all died. And the players were like, oh, really? Like, my character just died? And then I'm like, And then they all woke up and they're all sitting in this wizard. And the wizard's like, well, why did you do this? And why did you do that? All right, cool. Back to sleep. And then the next story started, but they remembered and they were basically stuck in a VR and they had to figure a way out, which didn't work as well as I wanted to. Because the players are like, yeah, but I want to leave and do other things. I'm like, but you're still gaining levels and experience and knowledge. And I think it was because I was a little young and didn't know how to run a game like that. Because there's too many layers in that game. I couldn't manage all the layers. So hopefully you can.
Yeah.
I would tell you, don't have too many layers. Keep it simple. Just two layers, maybe. The real world and the fake world. Don't do what I did and have like seven. Many.
Yeah. It didn't work. I will jump in the stream. I'm getting some messages that it's starting to kind of go up and down. So we might be losing, you know, video sync and audio sync. We're going to keep going. The audio will still be released on the podcast. The audio should be fine. But if anybody is watching the stream and it's getting a little staccato, that could be what's up. It looks like it's fine now, but it went red for a second. So the other thing I wanted to mention is like, I'm absolutely all on board for low prep. I think low prep is the way to go. I think in this particular case, unintentional or intentional, you and I are currently running games very similar, where I do a lot of work before the game ever starts, building out my world, my characters, what the NPCs are up to, what their plans are, what they're trying to accomplish. And then I just kind of throw my players in there, and then I can just react to what they're doing. Since you are using this other source material, you have a lot of information about the world.
Yeah.
You didn't necessarily create it, but you still have it in your head. So when they start doing things, you can go, oh, well, this is similar to this thing. I'll just do this, that kind of the other. So I'm proud of you for being low prep, but I do want to warn you that you can't always go into a game with absolutely no prep and it be the best game ever. Eventually that will bite you in the butt. So I would say have a couple like encounters planned. And then if things are not going well, go back to that prep.
Basically what I do is I watch one session would be like three episodes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I would just watch those three episodes, and then I'd see what monsters they're going to face. And I'd try and plan out the session plan it out in my head, and I'd write a couple things down, maybe not stat blocks. That way it's not I don't over or under attack them depending on what their health is at the time. But so that way I know what they're going to fight and if there are any weaknesses specifically to this creature.
Yeah. Health is just
it's just a number. It's like age.
A concept. I almost never give my bad guys hit points.
Yeah.
I let the players kill them when they should die.
Yep. When it's dramatically appropriate.
Yeah. Spoilers for anybody that's in a game.
Yeah.
Unless it's all right, there's 50 goblins rushing at you. You kind of know then when you're going to kill them. But usually the big bad guy is when I think it's ready for them to go. But that comes from years of playing and years of people going, oh, well, that's on page 32 of the monster manual, and that has 15 health. And they're like, okay. Well, now he has 15 levels of wizard, so luck.
Yeah. Power word kill.
I like it when players...
I used power word starve the other day.
Oh.
Because they were fighting one of the four horsemen, and one of them is famine.
That makes sense. Modified the spell a little bit.
Yeah, your tummy is grumbling now. Yay. Scurvy Knave says, I'm a high prep, low use GM. A lot of us were. I've grown out of that, but I think a lot of people start that way, which I think you're making a joke. But that's definitely how it was when I was younger. Is I tried to plan out every possibility. I would write out scripts of this is what the NPCs will say, like it's a video game, and then if the players ask me a question like, what's your birthday? I don't know. I didn't write that down. I wrote all this plot stuff. So I have over time evolved into a less prep type of person. So what was the most surprising thing of that game? You said it went really well, which makes me very proud.
Yeah.
What was the most surprising thing one of the players did or said, or just the mechanics, an attack happened in a way, what stood out to you as like the big moment of that session?
I have two sessions. Are you looking for the first session, which I thought was really good, or the second session where they took 3 hours each combat?
The first one, the one that went really good. Okay. So when you walked away and you're like, I nailed that, what stood out to you as the most successful part or just the most fun part? Like whatever you think stood out the most.
Well, I think the players had a fun time fighting. Well, it was originally a minotaur. It was a big buff minotaur. But when I described that they were creating earthquakes as they stomped, the players just decided to call it queso for the rest of the game.
Queso
is it's a Twitch streamer.
Okay,
that's popular right now, and basically the joke is he's fat.
Okay, well,
me too.
It happens.
Yeah. But I think they enjoyed that fight.
So did you do any mechanical adjustments, stunning attacks, making them fall to the ground, anything in particular that other than it just being a minotaur, with a big axe and a nose ring?
Well, yeah, I had him sometimes he'd fall on top of someone if they knocked him over wrong, and they'd they'd take damage because he's just so tall,
mm-hmm.
and he'd fall on them and they'd take maybe bludgeoning damage, or...
Mm-hmm.
If he like he could hold them down into like the dirt or something, and they'd like start suffocating because they couldn't breathe.
Okay. All right. That's definitely an interesting mechanic. So the second session, again, it seemed that it was maybe a little slow as far as the plot went. It took them a long time. Was it just like mechanically they weren't hitting enough and they weren't doing damage, or were they just like not really focused so much that on their turn they would spend 5 minutes like making jokes and talking, and that's why it took so long? Or why did it take so long, do you think?
Mostly it was the second one, but also like Chris said, I let them die when they're supposed to die. But if I was trying, because the villain, like the big bad of that kind of encounter, didn't hit a single time.
Okay.
So I was trying to get it so that way at least they got one hit in. But it was taking so long that if they did get one hit, probably whichever character I hit would go down. Mm-hmm. So I just let them die eventually.
Gotcha. So one thing I've done before, especially with like if it's like a single big boss, again, I don't know. I know you're playing fifth edition. I don't know how much of the rules you've read, probably more than me, which isn't much. But a lot of your boss monsters have lair actions, and they also have legendary resistances. So you could find
they're only level three. They're not.
Okay. But still, so one of the things that I like to do with like a single boss is I will give them, and this is like, I don't know if there's mechanics for this or not, but basically every time a character hits them, they get a reaction. So it's like, you hit me, I hit you, you hit me, I hit you. Because the way the action economy works in D&D, especially if you have one monster, four or five player characters are going to just massacre it because they get to go four or five times. They can use action surge. They might have multiple attacks and stunning spells. Yeah. So if I have one big monster, I pretty much every time a character hits it, it gets a free shot back, or it gets to do a thing. Like, it, you know, maybe it stomps the ground and they have to make a dex save, or they fall down prone, so they lose part of their action. That's one way to modify the action economy when you have one creature, which would give you more chances to like make it seem like it was doing something to them. So something maybe for the future. I think Chris, you looked like you were trying to jump in there.
Nope.
Okay.
I was just going to say, or ask a question. Do you roll your dice out in the open?
No.
You can always make the bad guy hit when you want him to.
I did do that because I had four bad guys, three henchmen, one like kind bigger bad.
Like boss monster type.
And almost all of them missed every single time, even with their pluses and minuses. Like I get like they just stopped hitting. So I'm like, okay, you get plus 10. And then he rolled a natural 2 and their armor class is like 20 because they're a paladin. But I try not to lie too much because I just feel like it's unfair if I lie all the time.
I do when it's cinematically appropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And the object is to have fun. And if you had fun and they had fun, then I think you did it right. Again, I know there are people, I've had those arguments online that people think that you should never fudge a die. I do. I've had fun. So I'm going to keep doing it. But I understand the other side of the argument. So one thing this came up, I was watching a TikTok about this. Somebody was talking about ways that you can speed up combat, which again, I think is the wrong question. The question isn't how to make combat faster, it's how to keep combat interesting no matter how long it takes. But one of the things they suggested is to pre-roll your monster's initiatives so that when you're getting the combat set up and you go into the initiative, you've already got theirs rolled. So while your mental load is trying to get everybody else's number, you're writing it down or you're organizing your cards or, you know, putting your placards up, whatever you do to track initiative. If you already have your bad guys, that's one less thing to do. My thought is, why not just let them go when you think they should? Kind of not quite, you know, the fudging thing, but just like, okay, so John goes on 20, Chris goes on 15, Michael goes on 12, bad guy goes on 21, other bad guy goes on 16, other bad guy goes on 13. Like, just sort of like choose where they go in that initial initiative lineup so that it makes the most sense. It's not something I've done like regularly, but I'll ask Chris first and then John. What do you think about that concept of just not rolling initiative for your side, not, you know, whether you tell the players or not, and then just putting them in where you think it makes sense, because that would also reduce some cognitive load.
Would never do that. I do it a lot.
Usually what I do is I just like have one big enemy if I have more than one enemy attacking, like an initiative, and then I group the rest of the enemies with the other initiative. So if I have five goblins and then one like wizard, I would have five goblins go all at the same time. And then the wizard have its own initiative.
Okay. But what I'm saying is like, don't roll that and just go, okay, I think it makes the most sense that the goblins go here and then the wizard go here. And now things can happen. Goblins get taken out. Yeah. People can hold their initiative. Like there are things that can cause that order to get altered. But
yeah,
the initial one, I don't know that rolling is really that important. I guess my own self argument is that if someone has spent resources, feats, or has some ability that like lets them go first, or they're really fast, or they have a high initiative bonus, it would be kind of crappy to go, oh no, I want my wizard to go before you, even though like the wizard would have to have rolled like a 19 or 20 to do that. So yeah. I probably wouldn't ever put them first outside of maybe like, again, the BBEG, the final boss, maybe they're prepared. Yeah. But other than that, I don't think there's anything wrong with going, okay, you know, your character gets to go first and then my wizard goes, and then these two characters get to go, and then my goblins go. I don't know. I think I might do that the next time I run just to see how it works. But I was just curious about it.
I think it depends upon the system. I do that some in Star Wars, because Star Wars, you choose what players go. So you could roll a high initiative roll and John could roll really low. But then I'm like, all right, PC1 doesn't necessarily have to be you going. You could say, all right, John, it makes better sense for your character to go. Mm-hmm. So sometimes as it's playing out, I'll mix that up. Most of the time I do roll ahead of time. Like I'll have usually like 10 initiative slots that I've rolled ahead of time, and I just cross them off as I use them. But sometimes I will put him in there depending upon the scene. I think it really depends upon the system. D&D, I'm more likely to roll because the high decks or people have spent stuff like you were saying. I don't want them to feel like I've cheated them in a way, not cheapened the scene by them not allowing their abilities to kick in. So I guess my answer is yes, I do it depending upon the system and the scene. I think more likely to do that at lower levels than higher levels, because sometimes at lower level, you know, you point and go, hey, the goblins are that way. And the character's like, but the dragon's over here. Okay. Well, now it's a very small dragon. It's got, it's been in a fight before. So it's one eye doesn't work. And
it was actually a bat who just had a loud roar.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Something like that. Just at lower levels, if they go the wrong way, so to speak, I don't want to necessarily kill them right out.
Right.
Unless that's the system we're playing again. I've played that system where players are like, yeah, if I screw up, I'm fine rolling a new character. And I'm like, oh, okay. Shadow of the Demon Lord, where's that book?
Yeah.
Make this easy.
So I also wanted to ask John, we are having the faculty retreat in September, which you and your brother are going to be at. And then we have a Catacon in November, and you are talking about running a game there again. Have you ever thought about changing systems to do like a one shot with your friends or try something? Like, I think, I know you played No Thank You Evil, and we've played the Marvel face rip set game, and you played D&D. Yeah. Have you got any interest in trying other systems? Is there a system in particular you want to try?
Not particularly. I'm interested in trying other systems, but for playing games for people I don't know, I think I'm going to try and stick with games like No Thank You Evil or D&D, either that are really simple or I already know fairly enough of, because I want to try and make the game for them fun, because if I introduce them to Pathfinder and I'm just suck at running Pathfinder, I don't want that to be their first go with Pathfinder.
No, I very much value that and respect that opinion. That's me too. It's one of the things I worry about, because we have a show. It hasn't happened in like 6 months now, but we had a show where we were doing sample adventures of new systems. And one of the things that kept happening to me is that when it was my turn to run, I'm like, well, I don't know the system well, and I'm afraid it will be a bad experience for the players or for the audience who might have been tuned in to learn something about this game. So it really kind of held me back from doing some of them as from a GM standpoint, because of that same reason. I don't want the reason you don't have fun is a failing of mine, that I didn't study enough, or I don't learn the system enough, that type of thing. So D&D, I can run that with my eyes closed. I never have to look at a book.
Yeah.
Whether I'm doing it right or wrong, I can still make it fun. I know I can make the game fun for folks. But if I try a different system, I don't want to wing that. Like, the whole point of trying another system is to try that system. So I definitely respect that. What I would say for me is, when I go to conventions, I try to play anything but D&D. or even the other games I play. Like I try to hit games I've never played before, because usually at conventions, same thing, the people who are running it usually know those games really well, and it's a great experience for most folks. So
yeah,
again, I would say you're not going to Gen Con this year, but you are going to a Catacon. I think we're going to CincyCon in September or October, so there's a chance there we might get to play some different games. But I think I want you and Jacob to play Savage World. That's one I would like for you to play to see what you think of it, because I think that's a
Setting?
Well, it's kind of a system or a setting agnostic. There's, you can play Savage Worlds in anything. It's more of an action story, so any sort of actiony movie sort of thing. But the main setting that I'm familiar with is Deadlands, which is like, it's called the Weird West. So it's like cowboys and zombies type of a thing. You got supernatural monsters.
I think you've talked to me about this before.
I was trying to set up a one shot and then it didn't happen, I think because Jakey got sick. But but I still want to do that sometime. But it uses a very different dice system. Like it doesn't use D20 at all, and I'd like to see how you how you work with that. And then if Chris, if you're planning on running any Star Wars, I'd like to see how they handle the Genesis system with the dice and the setbacks and whatever advantages. Just to see how they handle that. That might be a fun system for them to try.
Yeah. I've got a couple of those modules in my back pocket, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You'd like I said, that's got a different initiative system. So does Savage Worlds, the cards.
Yes.
You get dealt cards instead of dice. So each round you get a new card. So you get a new initiative slot.
And if you get the Joker, you get like +2 to everything. You can go whenever you want, and then you shuffle the deck at that time. So getting the Joker is really cool, but the DM might get the Joker, and then the bad guys get that. So
that does sound really fun.
And the way that I do inspiration on our games with the tokens, that's straight from Savage Worlds. Like that, in Savage Worlds, they're called bennies, but it's the same thing. You get a number of chips, and you can use them to re-roll and do different things. So essentially, we do inspiration like Savage World. So that's a thing I stole from them. So, all right. Well, I think we will move on there, but thank you for sharing the game. Hopefully we'll have you back in the future and we can check in to see as it continues, as it's going. And then at some point in time, I'd like to have maybe you and Jakey both on to talk about the game I'm running for you and how it's going.
It's been pretty fun. I'm the British.
I'm having a good time. You're playing a bard with political ambitions. I don't know that we've gotten into that very much. But hopefully we'll be able to circle back to that, but we will see.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to move into our second improv game. This is Where Have My Fingers Been? I did explain the game to John before we got on here, so he kind of knows what's coming. So the question again, you're the guest. Do you want to go first in terms of prompting Chris or I, or do you want to go first and being prompted and doing your scene?
I think I should be prompted first then.
Okay.
Since I've prompted you, I should be prompted this time.
Okay. Chris, you got something or you want me to come up with one?
Go ahead.
Okay. So first of all, you have to sing the song. Because again, New York Tater will flip tables. It'll be pandemonium in the street. So please sing the song for me.
What's the song? I forgot it. It's been an hour.
Where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
Where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
Okay. Your fingers are two goblins waiting for their turn in combat, and it's going poorly for your side.
Oh, man.
You're doing great. Keep going.
That wizard, man. I gotta stop the wizard. Tell my kids I hated them. Tell my wife she was ugly. No. Okay.
I would say that's where your fingers have been.
I think that's where your fingers have been.
Yeah.
All right. So since I prompted you, you will prompt Chris. Chris, please sing the song.
Where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
Chris. Your fingers have been two people waiting for the bathroom, but everyone ahead of them has explosive diarrhea.
Been to this concert.
Yeah.
I'm dancing. And me too. Oh, what is that smell? Oh, it wasn't me. Are you sure? Pretty sure it was that guy. It wasn't me. Must have been that guy. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I couldn't wait. Oh, I'm using the women's bathroom. Me too. Oh, that's a good idea. And that's where my fingers have been.
All right.
That would be proud. I managed to get.
I know you would. You did three. You went for four. That's a new record. We've never had a four-person thing before.
Brandon's going to need a cramp.
All right, here we go. Where?
That's another adult thing.
My fingers bent. I said, where have my fingers bent?
Two brothers tasked with cooking dinner.
Okay. So this is what we've been waiting for. Okay. We've prepared for this our entire life. Are you ready? A brookie dirk 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 dirk. A brookie bitch chicken dip dork. Great. I knew this was going to work. And that's where my fingers have been.
Yay.
Yay. All right. So that brings us to cryptozoology. This is a segment we're bringing back because we had a whole show that we were going to do and it never happened. That was going to be nothing but cryptozoology because I love doing it. I think it's one of my favorite things that we do here. But that show never materialized, so we're going to bring it back. If that show ends up showing up, we'll reevaluate. But the idea here is we're going to take a look at a monster, usually from D&D, but it doesn't have to be. And we're going to talk about like interesting ways we have used this creature in the past, or maybe brainstorm some ways that we could use them in the future that's more interesting than just hit it with a stick till it stops moving. John, you're the guest tonight, so you had a monster in mind you wanted us to talk about. What was that again?
I thought about the Lich before.
Okay, so the Lich, again, we've been watching Stranger Things, and there's a lot of D&D lore crossover. Vecna is not, well, the character going by the name Vecna in the show is not a Lich in the terms that D&D would use, but the characters kind of refer to him as a Lich because they're trying to contextualize what's going on, and that's the vocabulary they have. So we're going to talk about the Lich from a D&D standpoint. So Chris, I'll start with you. Have you ever used a Lich in your games before?
I have, and it went poorly because I was young as a GM and could not keep track of the spell list like I should have.
Oh, yeah.
And misread some spells and killed people, but I think spells are a little different now. I don't think Power Ward Kill actually kills people. I think it just does damage.
It can. It can still, if you're under 100 hit points, it's still, you're dead.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think it's that 100. I don't think that was the thing before. I think it was a save or die, and now it's save or die if you're 100, under 100. If you're like 101 hit points, it just drops you down to like zero or something along those lines. But it's still powerful, but not as powerful.
Yeah. Just like I said, it didn't go well. I think it was just too early on for me to comprehend all of that stuff that a Lich could do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to do it again.
Older versions like second and third edition, which is, it was basically playing like a 20th level spellcaster. You had to have all your spells laid out. It, you know, like fourth edition, they said, hey, here's the three things it can do, which I think was a really smart way to run monsters. But yeah, it was really hard to run a Lich correctly and not just wipe a party early days.
Yeah. If I had to do it again, I would make spell cards with each spell on it. When I use the spell, I would just pitch the card. Mm-hmm. So then I'd have, did I already use this? Wait, how did it work? Like, I already have them there and be like, okay, Power Ward Kill, Michael, do this. All right, that spell's used. You saved, good job, next. And keep it going that way. I overthought it too, I think. To me, a Lich is supposed to be super smart. So they had to go through a horde of other bad guys to get to him, because I don't think a super intelligent creature is going to just sit in its lair by itself waiting. Like, I feel like it's going to have minions you have to go through and followers and everything else. So I think I overcomplicated it. I still might have them do minions, but.
Yeah. In my early days, same thing. I tried to use a Lich a couple times because it was like the ultimate bad guy, this big evil wizard, but also an undead wizard. Like, it's just like very classic. That's who I wanted my bad guy to be. Players build up their levels to face them. And I did it poorly multiple times. I have one time that I think it worked pretty well, but I want to circle back to that one. So, John, again, now that you have seen Vecna or the Grinch in action, any thoughts about using a Lich in your game? Have you done that before, or why are you interested in a Lich in your game?
Well, I haven't used Liches before, but again, like you said, an undead wizard, they just kind of seem pretty cool, like a fun bad guy. And for like future things, I've seen this YouTuber. I think Pointy Hat is his YouTube channel name. He talks about like, so the Lich is like a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
He just like talks about doing liches with other classes, yeah, like barbarians and rangers and stuff. So I think that's just pretty fun to do, like a sorcerer lich who, where random stuff can happen to the players of the lich.
It's a cool concept. I know, I think we had talked about liches once before, and I had sort of mentioned like maybe someone becomes a lich for what they think is a good reason. Like they're not trying to be evil, but they have gotten some sort of prophecy that, you know, in 100 years or 1,000 years, this thing is going to happen. And they feel like they're the only person that can stop it. So how do they manage to stay alive that long to face this thing? And the only way they know how to do that is to become a lich. So they had good intentions, but the process of becoming a lich still corrupts you. I don't know that you could actually have a good lich. I mean, you know, the hell you want, but I don't know that it would really work that way. So I thought that was kind of an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Probably the most success I ever had, and they never actually faced them in the game, but I ran a 13th age game. It was one of our actual plays, so you can listen to it. We had one season, and then we never, unfortunately, picked up the season again. But in the 13th age, in the first edition, you have your 13 icons. These are like the most powerful NPCs in the realm, one of which is called the Lich King. You have another who's the Prince of Shadows, who is this sort of like high rogue trickster sort of character. And again, spoilers, if anyone wants to go back and listen to that series, I think it's really good, but you know, it's like 12 years old at this point. The Prince of Shadows had stolen the Lich's phylactery, which again, in the lore, is where their soul is kept. And that's what allows them to be immortal. And the only way to defeat a Lich is to actually find and destroy their phylactery as well.
They're Horcrux.
They're Horcrux. Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah.
And so the Prince of Shadows had stolen it from the Lich King. So they didn't know where their phylactery was. And they had hid it inside a dwarven made clockwork heart of one of the beloved NPCs to one of the characters. So in the game, all these undead creatures were trying to get to this person, and no one really knew why. Like, why are they suddenly after this guy? And it's because the Lich King finally realized where their phylactery was, and it was inside this dwarven clockwork heart. So basically, there was no way to get it out without also killing the beloved NPC. And so that was like all background stuff that didn't really come out. There were like hints at it. I think in like the final episode of the show, they kind of got to that part, but I just really like that concept of the Lich not knowing where the phylactery is, and that's what drives the plot versus just the standard, that type of thing. All right, anybody have anything else about liches we want to talk about before we move into our last segment?
Well, I like what Scurvy Knave says. He looked at the Lich's stats and just used them as a plot element. The PCs had to get an item that would defeat the Lich, so there wasn't a true fight with the Lich, but you use the stats and stuff to help you get there or hinder them to get there.
Okay.
You want to look at it. So that's a good way of doing it. I never thought of that. I mean,
it's weird.
I'm too literal with
the comment had not populated until you started reading it. So on my screen, I'm like, I don't see anything. And then it literally popped in as you were saying, that's why, my apologies, Scurvy Knave. I didn't respond to you because I didn't see it yet. But yeah, I do like that. That's also a very like story, like a novel, movie, and video game sort of plot where the big bad guy, you never actually face them. You have to get the thing that defeats them. And then that kind of like an instant win situation. So getting the items or item is the adventure. And then the Lich is just the plot that drives you why you're going after those things. So I do think that's a really smart way to do it so that you don't actually have to run the Lich. They're just the reason why things are happening. I'm sorry, John, were you trying to say something?
I was just talking about how I didn't have chat on, like, have the words on my screen.
Yeah, we try to, like, if someone comments, again, we don't have a ton of viewers, so we don't have a lot of chat, but we try to respond. So if somebody says something, we'll usually mention it in the show so that anybody who's the other guests that are here can also interact with them. So, all right, so that's going to move us to our final segment, and this is the audience Q&A. So we do have a couple people who are watching, Scurvy Knave among them. So this is just a quick opportunity. If you have any questions that you'd like to ask any of the three of us, feel free. If they're personal, we can refuse to answer them. They make sense if they be D&D or RPG related, but hey, you do you. We'll see what happens. But there's a little bit of a delay between us talking and it going out. So while there's a delay, we usually use this for our plugging section. So, Chris, is there anything you'd like to plug, sir?
Let's see. Make sure everybody goes to a Catacon. That's for sure.
August 15th, badges go on sale.
Yep. We'll be there. There's some things we're bringing back. I don't want to throw anything out
hopefully
there yet.
Fingers crossed. Not.
Yeah, I'm working on a couple things that were really popular, and I'm hoping they'll be as popular. And some new stuff. I think we'll have some fun with it. Otherwise, I really don't have a ton going on right now. You can only find me on Discord, because that's the only place I really go to in social media. Yeah, I have the other stuff, but I check them like once every other week or something just to see if anybody sent me any messages. So if you send me a message on like X or something like that, don't expect a response very quickly.
Yeah.
Find me on Discord. I check that daily because I'm on several groups there that are all very positive groups, because if they become negative, I just, I got too much other good stuff going on in life that I don't need negativity.
Well, let's quickly plug again, Smuggler's Blues. You folks are now part of the Rook and Rasp network. Yep. So you are streaming that every other week on Tuesday. So the night before detention is Smuggler's Blues, correct?
As much as we can. Life has definitely gotten in the way the last couple months. So we're hit or miss on that a little bit, but we've also looked at it on, you know, we've been doing this for 9 years. If we miss a day or two here and there, it's not a big deal. If we were making a, you know, yearly salary out of it, we would definitely be there. But we're doing it when we can, and we're trying to get back to kind of that concept of just some friends playing a game versus a show being produced. So it's been a lot more fun and a little more relaxed for me.
Very, very fair. John, any plugs?
My friends are trying their best to make a video game. So if you want to search up Freedom Siege on YouTube, you might get some stuff about that.
Very cool. Nice. So as for myself, again, I'm on Twitter just to promote Action 12 Cinema. I'm really not there, and I probably will go away because I kind of hate Twitter at this point. But I'm on TikTok. I'm actually having fun there. So again, I might eventually get cynical about it, but right now I'm having fun. So you can find me if you search the RPG Academy, but my actual user is MKR_2222. So either one of those should get you to me. I'm only a few followers away from 1,000, which is like kind of like the first benchmark. Once you hit 1,000, you can do extra things like put a link in your bio. Apparently that's a thing you need to do. I think I can go live already. I'm actually trying to figure out how I can simultaneously be on Twitch and TikTok. If I figure that out, we will start streaming to both of them. You can email me at therpgacademy@gmail.com. Again, Catacon, August 15th is when badges go on sale. The actual event is November 8th, 9th, and 10th. We are really hoping that this will be our biggest year yet. Hoping to get 600 people there. And I think that's doable. Again, I'm nervous because I'm always nervous, but I'm fingers crossed. I think we could do it this year. We did have a question come in from Scurvy Knave asking, what's your most anticipated part of Gen Con? Since I'm the only one going, I assume that answers questions directed at me. My favorite thing about Gen Con is always hanging out with my friends in the hotel, talking about our experiences. So that's an easy answer. Usually my most favorite events are the ones that I run, but I'm not running any games this year, but I am running a panel. So Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, Emma and I are doing a panel on how to get started running RPGs, specifically D&D, but there's a lot of it for everybody. I'm getting to play Dread. That's always one of my favorite games in the world. So I'm super excited about that. But if I'm being honest, it's going to be going to IPR and seeing my book on a table with all the other games, like a legitimate thing that actually exists in the world. That's probably what I'm most looking forward to. If I happen to win in any, because I don't think I will, that will instantly become my most favorite thing ever at Gen Con. But I won't know that till Friday night. Alrighty. So again, if there's any other questions, again, Scurvy Knave, thank you for the question. If there are any others, let me know. But John, there's always one question we ask all of our guests. Mm-hmm. So since this is your first time officially being a guest, I'm going to ask you. First of all, do you know what an action figure is?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. So it's very common when you get an action figure that they have some accessories, you know, like Indiana Jones might have his hat and his whip, that type of thing. So if they were to make an action figure from you, so there's a John action figure, what are the three accessories that would come included in the box?
my phone, a random charger in my pocket that doesn't actually go to my phone.
Yep, that's that tracks.
Fair.
And pocket lint.
I would have said a Xbox controller or a PS5 controller, either one, or a blanket. Those would be my answer. So, all right. Well, I really appreciate you being here, John. I hope you had a good time. I had a great time talking to you and getting you to be a part of this weird thing that I do. Chris, as always, thank you for being here. Everybody who's listening now or in the future, appreciate you as well. And with that, we will sign off here as we always do. Remember, if you're having fun,
you're doing it right.
Thanks. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.